And a very good evening. Welcome to My Kind of Music. And my special guest is a man who's been rocking and rolling for quite a few years now, about 25, I would say, to guess, is Roy Wood.
Robbie-ish. How you doing, Ray? All right?
All right. Only about 12 when you started, weren't you?
No.
I saw a thing on television a couple of weeks ago, and Gary Glitter swore he was only 40. I'm sure he's 50, but never mind.
Well, yeah, I think he's a bit older than 40. Well, he's got a son there, 23, isn't he?
Well, perhaps he started young. You never know.
True, yeah.
Okay, we're going to talk about the career of Roy Wood and his choice of music in My Kind of Music. Your first choice, an obvious one, I would think. Every rock and roller in the world appreciates the King, Elvis Presley. But why particularly Hound Dog?
Well, it's just that that track has got an atmosphere about it that's no one else could ever recreate, even if you really tried. And it's a sort of record, if it comes on in the car starts sort of jumping all over the road, you know, it's one of those. You just can't stop tapping your foot to it. And the guitar solo is absolutely wild, because I'm sure Scotty Moore didn't know what he was playing. I'm sure he started off in the wrong key and it sort of came right, and it's one of those that you can never actually make up.
If you never hit the right notes, bend them, they're bound to come right. Elvis right. Presley and Hound Dog.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
My Kind of Music and my special guest, Roy Wood. Just before the break there, we heard from Elvis Presley's Hound Dog. I remember once seeing him on American television, a thing that came to Britain, actually, of him actually singing to a hound dog on this television show.
Really?
And the dog just sort of sat there and did nothing, which is quite amazing. This rock and roll noise is going off, and the dog just going, well, yeah, I suppose so, mate, yeah, you know.
Can't get much more cooler than that, can you, really?
Really, really cool, man.
Yeah.
In the 70s, the early 70s, Roy, you were, in fact, nearly... the writer of an Elvis Presley song.
That's right, yeah. He was with the same publishing company as me, and they sent a pile of songs over, and some of them were mine, and he liked my stuff, and he says, "Right, get this bloke to write something for me." And at the time he was recording just a load of rubbish, really, and I would have been influenced by that type of thing, the Hound Dog stuff and Jailhouse Rock. And I didn't really know what he was doing at the time, what he wanted. So they arranged for me to go and see him at Lake Tahoe. And, of course, like the inconsiderate bugger, went and died before I got there, you know.
Yeah, the story of your life.
Yeah.
Nearly became an even more superstar than he already is, Roy Wood. Could have been writing for Elvis Presley. What about your early days? We mentioned earlier that you started sort of 20-odd years ago, Roy. Where did you start and how and why?
Was it that long ago?
It just seems that long ago.
Hang on. It was almost. I started in a group in Birmingham called the Falcons when I was about 16. I'd played before that. When I was about 10, I used to play it. I had one of those harmonicas with a button on the side, and I used to play it down at my dad's working men's club, you know, with a pianist playing Granada, all that sort of stuff. A load of rubbish, terrible. And I played the drums at my sister's wedding when I was 5. I remember that one. And apart from that, I got my first guitar when I was 16, and as I say, played in the Falcons and a couple of other local Birmingham groups, including Mike Sheridan and the Night Riders, who later became the Idol Race. And Jeff Flynn took my place when I left, and I formed the Move after that.
Mm. Jeff Flynn and you have had a long association, sort of taking part in different groups one way or another.
Yeah, very true, yeah. In fact, it was the first time I'd met him when he went for the audition for the Idol Race, for the Night Riders, which it still was. And I'd never met him before. He only lived about 3 or 4 roads away from me. But I'd heard about him, you know, because he was if somebody wrote songs in the area, you knew about him. And he was the first bloke in the area to have a sound-on-sound tape recorder as well.
Talking about 1967 and The Move, a bit of a wild group they were, but one claim to fame The Move's got is that the first record ever played on Radio 1 after the demise of the Pirates, when Radio 1, the pop radio station, started, the first record to be played was a Move record, in fact.
That's right, Flowers in the Rain, and in fact, the royalties from that still go to Harold Wilson. I didn't get a bean off that. Neither did it, any of us, really.
What about The Move? You've got quite a reputation as being the wild men of pop for that era, I suppose.
We were on stage. We were pretty wild on stage. But we used to... In fact, we had a reputation of sort of smashing their dressing rooms up and all that, which was basically an excuse for the promoters not to pay you at the end of the night, you know. But we didn't. I mean, actually, off stage, we were fairly quiet, really. We didn't socialise together very much. We used to keep ourselves to ourselves and... You know, stay at home most of the time.
Just honest to goodness, rock and rollers. Your next choice of music is, well, far removed from rock and roll, really. The Beach Boys. An early influence?
Yes, well, I've always liked the Beach Boys, and the reason I chose this track, It's OK, is because when I was over in America with Wizard in, I think it's 73-ish, something like that, I'd recorded a record called Forever, and... on the record, I did a bit of an impersonation of Brian Wilson on this one bit. And he'd heard the record, and he did a review on it himself in a column that he was writing in Los Angeles. And when I arrived there, he phoned me up at the hotel. He said, "Hi, Roy." And it was Brian Wilson on the other end of the phone. You know, it was great. And he invited me up to his house and everything. And he just started doing some sort of secret recording with the Beach Boys, because he hadn't been with them for a few years because of ill health and all that sort of stuff. And he was secretly recording with Carl Wilson and who else was there? Ricky Fertile. And they invited me down, and I played saxophone on this track. But you can't really hear it very much until towards the very end. You can just hear it in the background. It sounds like it's on the other side of the record. You know? But I'm in good company, because there's a few sort of guest players on there. You can't hear them either.
Okay, it's Roy Wood and the Beach Boys, and It's Okay.
Get right.
Well, there you are. That's the Beach Boys with Roy Wood on sax. Not obtrusive, that sax at all, is it?
Sounds like I'm playing with the blankets over me, doesn't it?
Known as a multi-musician, actually, Roy. How did that come about? I mean, usually you get, you know, rock and roll musicians, either guitarists, bass players, yeah, saxophonists, drummers, organists, whatever. How did you become a multi-musician?
Well, during the early move days, I started collecting instruments. I used to look around the second-hand shops and I bought myself an oboe and a bassoon and a cello and all sorts of stuff. And it's difficult to have those instruments in your possession and not have a go at playing them, you know. So I started having a dabble. And I enjoyed it so much that I started recording using these instruments, and it sort of went on from there, you know, snowballed.
Mm, in actual fact, you appeared with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra playing bagpipes in 1984.
That's right, yeah. In front of the Queen and Prince Philip, no, it was great.
Bit frightening.
It was a bit, really. I mean, from the audience, which, I mean, it was all sort of evening dress and that, and rattly jewellery time, you know. And from the audience, you look at the stage and there's a 130-piece orchestra all in, like, white dinner suits and that. And behind them, there was a 350-piece choir, the Royal Chamber Choir. And it was a set of steps that came down from the gods and sort of wound down towards the front of the stage. And who was the Burke who had to walk down the steps on his own playing Mull of Kintyre? Flipping out, my heart was really going, because I like to have a bit of a drink before I go on, you know. And I couldn't really have a drink, not because it would stop me from playing well, but in case I fell down the stairs or something like that. And I was standing there playing, and I could see the Queen from where I was in a box, and next box to them I could see Paul and Linda McCartney actually looking at me playing them and that. And behind me was Joan Collins sitting on this seat taking the mick out of me. I had a kilt on and that, but I had one pink sock and one green sock, and she was taking the mick out of me, and you know, it was difficult to concentrate. And Louis Clark, who was conducting, he was sort of enjoying himself quite a lot, and He kept going like this, and the orchestra were going on and on. It was like 15 choruses of Mull of Kintyre, and I was nearly passing out, you know, playing the pipes and that. And at the end of that, I had to put the pipes down and sing. And I sang the John Lennon So This Is Christmas one. And Eleanor Duran, who's a great flautist, American flute player, she's really good, played as well. And there was this Irish opera singer as well, singing with me and that. It was all quite nerve-wracking. And it started off with an introduction, and it should have gone, da 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 da, you know, that sort of thing. And then Louis Clark would nod to me, and I have to start singing on my own without the orchestra, and then they come in, you see. But with all the adrenaline going, Louis started it off too quick, and they were going, dee 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 dee, you know, and he da 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 da, and then he just nodded to me, and I thought, well, what can I do now? I can't start singing it that fast, because I'll look all right, twit. So I started it off at my own speed after that, and it's there for everybody to hear on the album. You know, my voice goes on the first note because I was so nervous. But it was all right at the end of that, and we went off at the end, all sort of bowed and waved and that, and all, you know, rose petals coming down from the ceiling and that. It's a really good night, and I thought, well, whew, that's great. I'm off to the bar now, and somebody grabbed me around the scruff of the neck and went, this way, Mr. Wood. And I was like, oh, I got to go to the bar, really. And said, well, you got to meet the Queen now. And we started again, the old heart went. But instead of, like you see on the Royal Command performance, everyone lined up and she goes along and shakes hands. They went into a private room, you know, the old chandelier room with a bar and stuff. And we had to go in separately, and there was a geezer on the door with a red coat announcing you and that, you know. Your Royal Highness, Mr. Roy Wood, I had to go in on my own. And nobody had told me what to say or anything. Oh, dear, I was so nervous, ridiculous. And she had the white gloves on with the DDT on, you know, so she didn't catch anything. And I had this sort of Rob Roy hat on with loads of feathers in and that, and I forgot to take that off, and I bowed, I must have poked her eye at the same time. There's, you know, if you had your time over again, you'd do it all different, you know. But it was all right. And Prince Philip says, he saw the feathers in my hat, you know. So he said, oh, pheasant. He says, did you go down the butcher's and get those? And I said, well, you know, there's a bit of a shortage of eagles where I come from. And that sort of started it off a bit. And I think I think he'd had a couple as well. You know, he was in a jolly mood.
From the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, Roy, to Led Zeppelin. Not much of a difference, really. That's your next choice of music on My Kind of Music, and it's called Dear Maker.
Yeah. Well, I'm playing this basically because I love the drumming on this one, and John Bonham was my favourite drummer, apart from being a very good close friend of mine. We used to go out boozing a lot together. In fact, he used to live about 5 minutes away from where I live. And it was a tragic loss. I mean, apart from being a mate and that, it was a tragic loss as a musician because he was my favourite musician of all time. He had something, there was something about his style that people have tried to emulate and just can't. And I think the drumming is exceptionally good on this one.
Okay, Led Zeppelin.
You don't have to go. Oh, oh, oh.
My Kind of Music, and my special guest Roy Wood of The Falcons, The Move, and the Electric Light Orchestra as well. Long time ago, you formed Electric Light Orchestra along with Jeff Lynne, was it?
I did, actually. It came from, the idea started when we were doing an album with The Move, actually, and some of the songs needed orchestral accompaniment, and we were using session musicians to help us out on the record, like violinist and all that sort of stuff. And I thought to myself, well, wouldn't it be great to write these sort of songs and have your own band to play them? And why not put an advert in the paper for instead of a guitarist or a drummer, for a cellist or a French hornist or something? Because there's bound to be people around at the same age that play those instruments but are interested in rock and roll. But it was, in the beginning, pretty difficult getting it all together. I mean, we went through about eight different string sections before we found the right one, because you got people who came along to the audition for the Pose and they were really dreadful, or you got people that were good and they didn't want to travel around, or they wanted too much money or that type of thing, you know. And when we eventually did get it on the road in the end, I think it took us about 18 months. And during that time, we had to keep the Move going as well, because EMI insisted that if we wanted to do an album as ELO, we would have to carry on recording as The Move as well, because The Move was the hit band at the time. And when we actually did get on the road, we had problems with sound, of course, because nowadays there's a company called Barkus Berry that make electric violins and electric acoustic type instruments. And of course, they didn't exist then. And we had to, like with my cello, I had a sort of a contact little contact pickup, and I used to have to jam it down the back of the bridge piece of the cello, you know, to get it amplified. But then you couldn't actually turn it up too loud because it would feed back. And of course, with the rhythm section being used to playing loud, like Bev Bevan's quite a loud drummer, it was very difficult to hear the acoustic instruments over the sound of the band, you know. And it was a long time before we got that sorted out.
What happened with you and ELO, Roy? Why did you split?
Well, basically, I mean, a lot of people, there was a lot of muck churned up in the press about it, and saying that I'd fall out with Jeff and all this, that and the other. It was nothing to do with that at all, really, because I like the music and I enjoy playing with the band and everything. But there was a lot of things that went on behind the scenes with sort of management and stuff like that. And basically, they stood for it and I wouldn't. I just sort of, you know.
Regrets?
Well, I suppose so in a way, because I would have liked to have been part of the American onslaught, of course. You know, all the tours that they did over there, they did very, very well. And I would like to have been part of that. But after leaving ELO, of course, I got Wizard together and was probably more successful with Wizard than I'd been in any other group.
OK, on to your next choice of music. Yardbird Suite, and that's by Supersax. So why this one?
Well, the same tour that I was on with Wizard that I told you about when I went to see the to do the Beach Boys thing, there's a group called Supersax playing locally in Los Angeles. And if anybody's ever heard of Charlie Parker, the saxophone player, his saxophone style is extremely unique, and he's got a lot of sort of idiosyncrasies in his playing that almost sound wrong. And these blokes got together, the five saxophone players, and they were playing all these Charlie Parker saxophone solos in harmony, in a five-part harmony, all going diddly-diddly-diddly-diddly, all in harmony. It was unbelievable. And of course, there's a couple of saxophone players in Wizard as well, and they were dead keen on them, and they were just sitting there with their mouths open. And we met a chap called Don Menza, who's a great saxophone player, used to do all the arrangements for Buddy Rich Orchestra. And he was there that night. He came and sat with us, you know, aided in lads, all this sort of stuff. And we said, well, yeah, what are you doing watching these? He said, oh, I'm depping with them tomorrow. I'm just sitting in with them, you know. And all that stuff, it's so difficult to play. And he was just going to go in there, read the music and play it straight off. And you'll hear by listening to this that how close they are in their playing, and also the, as I say, the little silly little things that Bird used to put in, Charlie Parker. They play them all together, smack on.
Okay.
Absolutely amazing.
Let's listen to it. My Kind of Music, and my special guest is Roy Wood, former member of The Move. Before that, of course, The Falcons, who nobody's ever heard of, apart from those who live in Birmingham, and ELO, and then Wizard. You got a bit of a reputation in Wizard for being a bit of a wild man once again.
Slightly, I suppose I was, really.
You were the Wizard, let's face it.
Yeah, the appearance was. I still feel that... The appearance is as important as the music, really. I mean, it shouldn't overshadow the music, of course, but people need to... They want to come and see them. They need to be entertained.
Do you think that is all important, Roy, the entertainment side of it? I mean, musically, yeah, it's got to be good, but do you think... thinking about Def Leppard, for example, good records, not very good sound on stage, but very exciting to watch.
I think heavy metal is in a different sort of category, really, because the sort of followers that follow... The headbangers that follow heavy metal, which I'm one of them a little bit because I like a bit of heavy metal myself, are more dedicated to that type of music, and I feel that they are dedicated to the excitement and the volume and you know, just sort of forgetting about everything and just jumping up and down and going wild, basically, you know.
Wizard were a little bit like that, though, a bit of an exciting stage show.
A little bit, yeah. We tried to put a bit of the sort of theatrical thing into it as well, really. Because, I mean, if it was just the music, I mean, people might as well stay at home and play the records if they're not going to actually see something different as well.
I remember once seeing Dire Straits, and they were excellent, but not very exciting visually.
That's right. Well, I've never seen them live, but I've seen the videos and that, and I agree with you.
Excellent music, but not very exciting. But there you are, Wizard were. Your next choice of music is back to the 50s, in actual fact. Eddie Cochran and Come On Everybody.
That's right. Eddie Cochran was way ahead of his time. He was a very clever bloke, actually, and he was the first rock and roller that I know that used to play all his own instruments on his own records, on these tracks like Summertime Blues and Come On Everybody, apart from playing great guitar for its time. He played the bass as well and the drums. And in fact, that that beat that he used to do, the double bass drum one that went ding, 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 ding. He invented that. And he taught Brian Bennett from The Shadows how to play it, which Brian was really quite chuffed about. I think Brian was the first English drummer to use that on a record on Do You Want to Dance, Cliff in the Shadow.
Because Eddie Cochran started that as a session musician, in actual fact, in a recording studio, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. He was excellent, though. Very good.
You mentioned there, Roy, that he was way ahead of his time, but this has been said about Buddy Holly as well, but do you think, had sadly both of them not died, do you think they would have still been around today and still making music?
Well, it's obvious that Buddy Holly would have gone into country music, wouldn't he? With, you know, he'd have been a Johnny Cash-type person. But it's difficult to say about Eddie Cochran. I think he probably would have become a record producer. Maybe.
Mm. Rather than carrying on as a rock and roller?
Well, probably a bit of both, really.
Yeah, because he was only about 22 when he died, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, very young.
So there you are. Well, let's take a trip back in time to round about, I think, 1959-ish.
You were start of a 10.
Eddie Cochran and Come On Everybody. Short records in 1959, weren't they?
Yeah, I think they would have been back again, short records. I like them.
Mm. Not much good value for money, though, really.
No, true, yeah.
2-minute records, you get sort of 5 and 6-minute these days.
Yeah.
That, a very raw sound, Roy. I mean, okay, it's what, 25 years ago, over. But very basic and, yeah, and very sort of exciting sort of thing.
Very exciting and very unpretentious as well. I mean, they used to sing about things about worrying if they could borrow the car or if they could get into the dance without their ties on and all that sort of stuff, you know. And it's basic and it's really nice.
Probably recorded for a guest on that particular record, probably on a 4-track, maybe even only a 2-track machine.
Yeah. He must have had to do quite a lot of thinking about that. It must have been a lot of trial and error involved recording that thing, if he played all the instruments himself.
Apart from being a recording artist yourself, recording star, nay, you're also a record producer. In 85, do you think that maybe, you know, we've gone a bit too far with the multi-tracking and, you know, digital computerised recordings and...
I think some people have. I mean, I've walked into studios when there have been producers there with computers and like, automatic sequencers, and they've plugged them all in together, press the button, and they've gone off to have the lunch break, and more or less, you know... I mean, that's going a bit far, but coming back and there's a backing track there that's like a disco job, and every track they record all sounds the same, you know. And I'm not very keen on that, but it's how far you take it. I mean, you can use the facilities of those type of things to improve your recording techniques.
But don't you think though that the rawness has gone you know, from rock and roll?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, a lot of heavy metal stuff is still quite raw. I mean, Van Halen and, you know, groups like that. But, of course, the equipment that you use now is so much more sophisticated that the sound is bound to be less distorted and a bit more posh.
Mm. Even going back to when you first started recording with The Move, it was a bit trial and error them days, wasn't it?
It was, really. I mean, even in the early Wizard days, it was a bit, what's her name? I mean, the Christmas record, I wish it could be Christmas every day, I did a 12-inch remix of that, and I managed to get a copy of the original 16-track recording that we did. And some of the actual sounds on it were dreadful. I mean, the bass was distorting and all sorts of stuff, you know. And how the hell I mixed it in 1973, I'll never know. It was a real mess, you know. Certain tracks with about half a dozen things on, you get the vocals going for two verses and then a tambourine come out at you. Terrible.
I hit twice round that record, though, and sort of been around every Christmas since 73, but in 84, Christmas 84, of course, it made the charts once again. Must have been a bit of a surprise and a bit of a pleasure as well.
Well, it was great, really, because most of the people you talk to in the pub think that it's re-released every single year, and it's not. It's not actually in the shops, even though it's played every year on the radio non-stop. And I went up to EMI and I'd painted a cartoon thing, a Christmas card type thing, and I had the idea of using that as a new bag, a new package, and doing a 12-inch remix of it, and they agreed to actually re-release it, which I'm really pleased with.
Were you surprised when it got back in the charts? Apart from being pleased.
I was pleased, yeah. I don't know, really. I promoted it quite a lot, you know, so I was keeping my fingers crossed all the time. Sort of mixture of surprise and pleasure, I suppose. Yeah, you're right.
I think it's come down to being one of those rock and roll Christmas standards by now, I'd imagine. Not quite in the Street of White Christmas, but getting on that way. Right, your next choice of music. A bit diverse again, Robert Farnon's orchestra.
Yeah, well, yes. Do you remember all those sort of tunes that before the days of Radio 1, that they used to play on the early morning radio before you went to school in the morning?
The late programme.
Yeah. Before you went to school in the morning, you know, sort of di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di-di, all those silly tunes and that. Robert Farnon wrote all of those. And he wrote sort of Hancock's Half Hour and all the old BBC themes and that. And he's a really clever bloke, because you listen to some of these tunes and there are about three or four different, totally different, diverse tunes all welded together. And the way he gets from one to the other is very, very clever. And this, the sort of jumping beam one is very, very difficult to play on the flute. I mean, I couldn't play it, but a saxophone player that I know can play it. And he really ties his fingers in knots trying to play it. Someone that goes da 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 da, really jolly.
My Kind of Music, and my special guest Roy Wood, formerly of ELO, Wizard, and Roy Wood's Helicopter, and Roy Wood, and Happy Christmas Everybody, I Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day, and record producer, superstar. You did a lot, Roy, in your short career, because it's not really a long career in the music business, 20 years or so.
A bit. I'd like to do a lot more yet. I've got a lot more things. I've always got lots of ambition, you know, and I always enjoy challenge. And there's a few more on the way yet, hopefully.
Mm. Carl Wayne, former member of The Move, who left to do a cabaret, funny hats and telling jokes career. in fact, a couple of years ago, you were recording Carl Wayne.
Him. I produced a few tracks with him, yes, but I think he had a few problems with his record company at the time. And we did five tracks, and only one of those got released. The others are on the shelf somewhere.
What happened with The Move? I mean, why did Carl Wayne leave The Move? Because he was doing so well at the time. And then all of a sudden he goes into the cabaret bit.
Yeah, well, it was... We changed management, I think, when Blackberry Way hit number one. Our previous manager sold us to another manager. And he used to manage groups like the Tremolos and the Marmalade and, you know, that sort of Blue Mink and all those type of people, cabaret-type groups. And it was a clean-up the Move campaign, really, because we had such a bad reputation of, you know, as I said before, you know, smashing places up and that, which we didn't really, I mean, any a bit. And we couldn't get any work. So we all turned into nice boys for a minute. And they put us on the cabaret circuit, and of course, like, Carl Wayne loved that, you know, doing his Tom Jones bit in his white suit at the front, you know, and it was like being Carl Wayne's lead guitarist, and I wasn't really keen on that. You know, I used to hide behind my amp in embarrassment, and, you know, I used to wear rather odd clothes, you know, when I went on stage, and I didn't go down too well on cabaret circuit. And we sort of, I mean, me and Carl get on very well now, but at that time we didn't. We were drifting apart because I was sort of, in my spare time, I was going off doing rock and roll gigs with local bands and that, you know, and that. Being loud just to get me home back. And he wanted to travel more into that area, the sort of cabaret type thing, which he did, you know, fairly successfully, really. Since then he's been doing a lot of you hear his voice on many of the TV jingles, you know, the sort of adverts about babies' nappies and all that stuff.
What a way to make a living, from yeah. Rock and roll to babies' nappies. Somehow, I couldn't imagine you doing the cabaret circuit, right?
No, I didn't do it for long. I don't think they like me.
Okay, your next choice of music is Rainbow, rock and roll once again, and I Surrender. So why Rainbow particularly?
Yeah, well, as I said before, I am sort of semi-keen on heavy metal as well, and I thought when the heavy metal music came back into fashion again, I think Rainbow were one of the best bands, purely because they were heavy, but they were melodic too, you know. I like the songs that they wrote, and of course I like Richie Blackmore's guitar sound as well. It's a really good band. It's a pity that they didn't go on to do greater things, really.
Well, maybe you never know, it'll all come back again. I Surrender from Rainbow.
Make it all my own. That's not the way it was meant to.
Bit of good old rock and roll for you there, and from my special guest on My Kind of Music, I Surrender from Rainbow, and the guest is, of course, Roy Wood. Final choice coming up, Roy, but what about the future of Roy Wood? Are you going to carry on being the wild man of pop as you have done over the last 20 years or so?
Well, hopefully. Over the past 3 years, of course, I've been doing mainly production work and engineering in studios, but it's getting a little bit claustrophobic now, and I fancy getting out and having another bash.
Because you do like performing live on stage, although you like making records as well. But
yeah, I do really. But I mean, last year I did a couple of tours with Helicopters, and I'm in a difficult position because being sort of well known with three different hit bands, Move ELO and Wizard, people expect a big show, and by the time you've hired all a big lighting system, big PAs and trucks and roadies and everything that goes with it,
you're in debt.
It's very very expensive, and you end up losing at the end of the day. Yeah. Yeah.
But hopefully in 1985 you'll get something together.
Oh, fingers crossed, yeah.
Single out, new album on its way.
Yes, and I've got myself a new manager, and we're going to have a little bash in America as well.
Okay, your final choice of music is not very appropriate, really. Busy doing nothing. Dave Stewart and Barbara Gaskin, I'm sure you're going to be very busy in the future 20 years. Whether you'll still be the wild man of pop in another 20 years, I don't know. But anyway, thanks for being my guest on My Kind of Music, Roy.
Cheers,
lots of luck in the future, and no doubt our paths will cross again.
I hope so. Thanks very much.
Busy doing nothing. Bye.
Cheers.
For now.
I'm teaching them how to swim.